Welcome to the November 3rd, 2021 meeting of the Board of Directors of the Eastern Municipal Water District. I will, Linnea, would you like to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance this morning? If we could, everybody please stand.
Ready, begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
If I could ask our board secretary to call the roll, please.
Director Corona.
Here.
Director Slauson.
Here.
Director Armstrong.
Here.
Director Record.
Here.
And I'll note that we also have legal counsel with us in the room. April, do we have anybody wishing to address the board in public comment this morning?
Not that I'm aware of.
Very good. Thank you so much. With that, we'll go to item two on our agenda, which is our recognitions. And I believe Mr. Howell, good morning.
Thank you, President Pauley. I'm going to introduce Jeff Wasserman, our purchasing manager, who will present our Supplier of the Year recognition to Don Peterson Construction.
Very good.
Good morning. For the past 15 years, the Purchasing Department has recognized a Supplier of the Year who's stood above the rest in providing goods and services to the district. The selection process includes the quality, importance, and frequency of the goods and services provided, along with feedback from district staff on the supplier performance. This year, we're recognizing Don Peterson Contracting of San Marcos as our Supplier of the Year. Don Peterson has provided service to EMWD since 2005 and is currently one of our on-call facilities mechanical contractors. Recently, Don's completed work at the Temecula Treatment Plant for the effluent meter replacement project and also at the Reach 4 dissipation inflatable rubber dam installation. Some common themes ring true on Don's performance at both projects, including his commitment to safety, following district safety protocols from lockout, tagout to confined space entry. His team is very resourceful as well, and we're able to overcome various obstacles on both projects, and Don's excellent communication skills and flexibility resulted in on-time project completion within budget. Feedback from staff on Don's performance over the years is he brings creative solutions to the table, and we enjoy working with Don very much. At this time, I'd like to call up Don Peterson to say a few words and accept the award. Thank you. Don?
Welcome.
Thank you. I can say is Eastern Municipal Water District has been extremely easy to work for over the years, and it allows me to be creative, which got me here today. So thank you again.
All right. Do you want to do a picture?
The back of my head. Okay. A couple of them on three. One, two, three. And another one. One, two, three. Last one. Thank you.
And again, I'd just like to note this organization doesn't really work unless we have good partners here that actually that do a great job for us. And so I do appreciate that. With that, we'll move on to our executive reports, and we'll start with our general manager's report, Mr. Mawad.
Good morning, President Pauley, members of the board. My report is included in your packet. Under new and ongoing items, in July of this year, the state, as you are aware, allocated nearly $1 billion of funding to be administered by the State Water Resource Control Board to assist past due water and wastewater customers who have experienced financial hardship as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. Through the California Water and Wastewater Arrearages Payment Program, water and sewer agencies are eligible to submit funding requests for past due arrearages that occurred during the pandemic, specifically for the period of March 4th, 2020 through June 15th of this year. Last week, our staff submitted an application for water arrearages totaling approximately $3.6 million. Sewer arrearages will be submitted under a subsequent application, which we expect to be released early next year by February. The disbursement of funds by the State Water Resource Control Board for the water arrearages is expected to commence later this month. We will keep the board posted on further developments. Next item on my report, as the board is aware, we recently submitted a proposal to AQUA for potential co-sponsorship of a legislative proposal regarding non-functional turf. Last Friday, the AQUA State Legislative Committee considered co-sponsorship of EMWD's non-functional turf proposal. Following a robust discussion that included comments both in support and in opposition, the committee voted to form a working group and delayed voting on the proposal until language could be brought forward to the committee in late January. While not ideal, this process still provides a forum to exchange ideas, to advance the proposed legislation that could influence policy statewide and aid with funding opportunities to support solutions geared towards outdoor water use efficiency efforts. Staff will continue coordinating with AQUA's working group to define a path forward on the proposed legislation, as well as evaluate alternative pathways. The next item in my report, I'm very pleased to share with the board that our virtual open house event, WaterFest 2021, was held last week, and it was a success with several hundred public participants over a four-day period. Staff created a virtual open house experience by utilizing a microsite to host information, videos, and interactive activities for customers and stakeholders. The kickoff celebrated EMWD's 71st anniversary, provided an overview of our services to 130 visitors. The next day, 90 visitors received conservation tips and information about water use efficiency programs available to our customers. Third day, we offered information about EMWD's education program, careers in the water and wastewater industry, and interactive activities to 155 customers. The final day was reserved for EMWD's Virtual Water Leaders Academy program, where 68 attendees learned more about EMWD. Four-day event was promoted via e-blast, newsletters, websites, and social media postings, as well as advertisement through local news outlets and community partners. I want to take a moment to express my appreciation to our public government affairs who organized the event, as well as the entire team from EMWD who participated and supported the effort, including the educational programs, as well as the Water Leaders Academy. Much appreciated. Next item is a reminder to the board that beginning next board meeting on November 17th, EMWD's board meetings will be webcast live and recorded for subsequent posting on EMWD's website. Guidelines for staff, guest presenters, and board members will be distributed later today to assist participants with best practices for presenting and participating on camera. Under items of interest to the board, as you may be aware, late in September of this year, the Water Infrastructure Funding Act, a ballot initiative, cleared the comment phase, and proponents are seeking a ballot title and summary through the Secretary of State's office in order to initiate the qualification period for the November ballot. To qualify this item for the ballot, approximately 1.5 million signatures must be collected. This ballot initiative would allocate 2% of the state's general fund every year to invest in increasing California's water supply reliability. The funding would not expire until new water projects supply approximately 5 million acre-feet of new water to California's farms and cities each year. The initiative would streamline the CEQA process in the same manner that has been approved for low-income housing and sports stadium. To date, supporters for the ballot initiative largely include water agencies in Orange County and agricultural interests in Central Valley, as well as a number of legislators, including four members of EMWD's state legislative delegation. With the board's concurrence, staff will be sending a letter endorsing the proposed ballot initiative. Finally, I wanted to share with the board that on October 20th, I had the opportunity to meet with Ms. Sandy Curl, the general manager of the San Diego County Water Authority. We met for lunch over in Temecula, discussed a number of issues of common interest, including the current drought conditions and water supply outlook for the Colorado River and the State Water Project. It was an opportunity to share perspectives on a multitude of issues facing our region. With that, Mr. President, members of the board, be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions for Joe?
Director Armstrong? Just one question on the Water Infrastructure Funding Act. Is there enough language in there already to kind of see what types of projects it's going to fund? And would those be projects that would be beneficial to Eastern? Or is it not that far along yet?
You know, my understanding is that specific language as far as projects is not included in the ballot initiative, primarily geared towards establishing a framework to set aside 2% of the state's budget towards projects that will increase water supply to the entire state. So I will confirm that, Dr. Armstrong, but my understanding is specific projects are not necessarily identified in the ballot initiative.
Can I ask a follow-up question?
Go ahead, yes, yes.
On the ballot measure, who's actually funding the signature gathering?
You know, it's an interesting issue because water agencies, you know, are not able to support ballot initiatives. My understanding is this initiative was proposed by Mr. Edward Ring, if I'm not mistaken. So I'd have to find out who the organizations are that will be funding the ballot, or I should say the signatures. The signatures, as you may be aware, Director Slauson, it may cost upwards of $5 million to be able to collect 1.5 million signatures based on the cost of other ballot measures. So we'll find out more as far as who may be willing to fund this effort, and I'll get you that information.
Just curious, I suppose. Thank you.
And along those lines, Joe, I would like a little more information on it. I mean, I support it in conceptually, but I'd like a little more information. And I'd like to actually, if we do support it, actually take a formal board action on that.
Okay.
So if we could maybe bring that back at a future meeting.
Absolutely. So we will go ahead and bring forward information, including a proposed board action. And at that time, we will be able to address some of the questions raised this morning. Absolutely.
Director Record, do you have any questions for the general manager?
No, thank you.
Very good.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. With that, Laura, do you have anything for us this morning?
Yes, I do. I'd like to provide an update on the CIS Go Live. As you recall, we went live on October 18th, deploying the Kayenta CIS, as well as phase two of our EMWD's My Account customer portal, and integrating our new mobile work management tool, Clavest. So early response from our customers indicate that the added features, such as self-service start and stop functionality, the year-over-year usage comparisons and predictive usage charts are very well received. In fact, one customer submitted comments that read, "I love the new setup, gives me instant gratification that everything I'm trying to do to save water is working. Love the current and predicted usage and the comparison to last bill." So to date, the call center reports a little over 7,000 customer calls have been processed utilizing the new billing system. Meter Services has completed about 1,300 work orders, and billing reports over 90,000 customer bills have been generated. And as President Pauly always mentions, this is a cash register for the district, and we've processed payments utilizing the EMWD My Account customer portal, totaling $4.7 million in just 2 weeks. So as is common with these types of system implementations, the team did experience a few issues when executing the billing process and quickly started working on resolutions. Customer-facing issues included customers having a pre-established payment arrangement, which impacted the amount due on their bills, so the totals were off a bit. But they quickly fixed the problem. We did stop about 800 of these bills until it was corrected. It's been corrected, and now it's functioning as expected. The team now is focusing on fully deploying our customer communication preferences, a feature that will allow customers to select how and when they would like to receive communication from EMWD. Lastly, Kayenta is also now working to address agreed-upon items that were deferred to post-go-live. Examples of these items would include internal reports, minor addition to customer usage graphs, and disposition of service orders. So we're moving along very nicely in the last couple of weeks since we went go live. Do we have any questions? And Dan's here if you have any difficult ones.
So I'm just thrilled that it's working as planned. And again, I want to congratulate everybody involved. It was a long process, but it's great to see it finally out there. And the fact that we're getting feedback from our customers is fantastic. So.
Well, thank you.
Very good. Nick?
Yes, I have one item I'd like to share with you. Wanted to let you know that we've been having ongoing discussions with the City of Paris city manager with regards to their request for us to have another look at consolidation of their water and sewer systems, and that's been going very well since we last presented and discussed this item with you and received your direction with regards to some specific things that we need to have in place, specifically an MOU with appropriate indemnification language. Ensure that we get written confirmation from Liberty Utilities that, in fact, their negotiations and potential deal with the city is completely done and is not being further considered. And also our desire to establish an ad hoc advisory committee that would include members of our board and their city council. Those discussions have been going very well. They're in concurrence with all of our requests, and we're moving forward in developing the appropriate MOU language and necessary indemnification. Martin is working directly with city council with regards to what that language should be, and also helping us reach out and get the confirmation that we need from Liberty Utilities. So I have high expectations that we'll be able to wrap that up within the next few weeks and be able to bring that MOU back to this board for your consideration. Any questions?
No.
Thank you.
Very good. Good morning.
Good morning, President Pauly. No updates from me this morning.
Updates from you this morning. Thank you for doing our flag salute, though.
My pleasure.
Mr. Melendez.
Good morning. I had a couple of items. One is the reclamation managers and operations teams have been working on a new database to manage the plants for some time, and we're planning to switch over to that on Friday, so that's a big milestone for that group that we're looking forward to. The other thing is you may have heard some time ago we had started a pilot project with Rockwell Automation to test a machine learning system that uses artificial intelligence to control different processes. So we decided to partner with them on the pilot and applied it to our aeration controls at the San Jacinto plant. We recently wrapped that up and got the results on Monday from that study, and the project was quite successful. We were able to control the DO in the basin much more tightly, and we were saving 11 to 30% on air in the basin, which will translate to substantial electrical savings. So just wanted to share the results of that technology with you, and that's all I had today.
Thank you. I along those lines, that might be an interesting informational topic someday that you could present to the board, the future of AI and how that may be some future opportunities here, since I know you and I both like that topic, and I think it might be interesting to the whole board of what's out there in water world as far as artificial intelligence.
Yep, that's the plan, and I'm also looking to expand it to other processes as well, like chlorine dosing and perhaps some other things we can find. So definitely we'll come back to you with more on it.
We will do an informational item at a future board meeting on that, okay?
Yep.
All right. Very good. Any questions? Very good. Let's move to item 4, which is our consent calendar. Director Corona, do you have a conflict?
No, I have it on the action calendar.
On the action, okay, I apologize. So I will, does anyone want to pull an item on the consent calendar for separate discussion? For a motion and a second?
I'll make that motion. Motion
by Director Corona, seconded by Director Slauson. May I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
And that passes 5-0. We'll take him to agenda item 5, which is our action calendar. Item A is to approve and authorize a renewal of consulting contract for representation in Sacramento with Namela Papayas Associates, not to exceed $10,000 a month. And Ms.
Danielle is here. She's going to be presenting this item for us.
What's that?
She will be presenting this item for us, and I believe we do have representatives from MPA on the line as well.
Very good. Good morning, Danielle.
Good morning, President Pauly. Good morning, members of the board. Pardon me. Today we have before you our contract with Namela Papas and Associates. In 2018, we did solicit an RFP proposal for applications, and Namela Papas was one of the applicants. We had a robust interview process, and we did initially hire them for 1 year with the opportunity to exercise an additional 2 years. December 31st is the end of that additional two-year contract. We have been exceptionally pleased with the work of Namela Papas. They are our eyes and ears on the ground in Sacramento. They've been excellent at helping us advance septic to sewer funding initiatives. They've been very supportive and willing to move the ball along with us on the regionalization concept. We've been, again, very, very pleased with the work that they do in Sacramento, and we'd like to extend their contract for an additional 2 years, recognizing the extensive work we have underway in Sacramento and recognizing that we do have a very good working relationship with NPA, and we'd like to continue that working relationship. As it was indicated, we do have Jamie Miner and Aaron Namela with us on the line today if they would like to add additional comments.
Sure. I'd love to hear from
you. Good morning. Good morning, Aaron Namela of Namela Papas, and thank you, Danielle, for that very generous introduction. It's been an honor for my colleague, Jamie Miner, and I to represent the district. As you know, you have a tremendous amount of credibility in Sacramento because you're forward-thinking problem solvers, and you really do lead among the districts. In short, you make our job really easy, and Danielle in particular does. So we're so excited about the possibility of being considered again and potentially continuing that representation. Thank you. We're available for any questions you might have.
Very good. Do we have any questions on this item?
No, I would just say Danielle's done a great job advocating for the interests of the district, and the fact that you're recommending that we continue with them makes me support it.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Director Record, any questions on this item?
Well, I agree with what Director Slauson said. I think our LEDS staff does a great job, and whatever tools they need, I'm more than happy to help them acquire. So I would move this item.
Moved by Director Record, like the second by Director Slauson. I will add, too, that Danielle does a fantastic job for this district. And with that, may I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
That passes 5-0. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank our team in Sacramento for their great service. We'll move on to item B, which is to approve and authorize award of contracts with the Neller Water Technologies, LLC for $667,000 and CDM Smith Incorporated for $86,000 for the Paris Water Filtration Plant Ultraviolet System Replacement Project and an additional appropriation of $1.1 million. Brown, good morning.
So just give you a little background. The Paris Water Filtration Plant was constructed in 2002. It treats water from the Colorado River Aqueduct and State Water Project, and its plant capacity is 24 million gallons. So today we're talking about replacing the UV systems at the plant. There are three UV systems, and they were commissioned in 2006 as part of the 20 MGD expansion. And then in April of 2020, staff was notified that Trojan, the manufacturer, would no longer be supporting many of the components required to keep the systems operational. So staff acquired the materials we thought necessary to keep them going. And then in July of 2020, reached out to CDM Smith to help us develop a comprehensive evaluation of the system. So part of their process was to develop a UV system design criteria, the UV system alternatives, and then provide recommendations for staff. So three manufacturers were evaluated, and that was the Nora Water Technologies, which was previously Calgon, Trojan Technologies, and then Wedeco. And these were chosen because of their history, successful history in the market, and that they represent 80% to 90% of the market share. So as a result of the findings, district staff selected Denora and Trojan 3-log inactivation systems to move forward with. And the main reasons for that is they fit within the existing building footprint, they meet the specification requirements, and they provide greater operational flexibility. So the staff seek to develop an RFP and, again, reached out to CDM to help us with that development and specifically to develop a UV disinfection system specification that we could use. So we did publish the RFP on September 27th, and then in October we received proposals from Denora and Trojan, the two pre-selected vendors. And Denora received the highest score and provided the lowest price. And you can see there Denora's cost for the three systems was $667,000, where Trojan came in at approximately $997,000. So as part of continuation with this project, staff requested that CDM provide us construction support for this. They've been involved in the entire progress or process, and they'll be able to help us with that. And their scope includes amending the Title 22 plan and helping the district through the process. And the total amount for their cost for this is around $86,000. District staff will be installing the equipment, and we're going to be installing each system one at a time so as not to impact the plant operation. As we take the first system out, we've got a full spare for the other two, so that kind of helps us in that case too. But we want to make sure that we're not impacting operations at all. The project cost estimate, or the total estimated project cost, is approximately $1.2 million, and that includes previously allocated funds to CDM for their assistance with the technical memorandum and the specification development. So if we receive approval today, we intend to issue a PO this month for three UV systems and the contract with CDM, and we'll begin installation in May of 2022 with expected completion and project completion in March of 2023. So we're recommending that the board approve and authorize a contract with Denora Water Technologies for the procurement of three ultraviolet systems in the amount of $667,000, and then also approve a contract with CDM Smith for design and construction support services for the UV system replacement project in the amount of $86,107, bringing the total contract amount to approximately $166,000. And an additional appropriation of $1,132,522. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions on this?
No questions.
Director Record, any questions?
No questions.
Okay, good. I just had one. So it appears that these are about a 20-year life cycle on them?
Yes. Well, I would say maybe 15. With the way technology is changing today, it's if you get 15, you're doing really well, especially with cybersecurity issues and things like that, which is what we face with the current units. 10 to 15 is pretty good.
Okay. I'm just curious of that. With that, do we have a motion?
I'll move it.
Motion by Director Slauson.
Second.
Seconded by Director Armstrong. May I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Crona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
And that passes 5-0. We will move on to item C, which is to approve and authorize an agreement with Brown and Caldwell, $3.1 million for final design for the Purification Water Replenishment Advanced Water Treatment Facility Project and an appropriation of $3.8 million. Good morning.
Thank you. Director Pauly, directors. I'm going to start off first by talking about our Groundwater Reliability Plus program, kind of give you an overview of that and how this project fits into that project. And then I'm going to go over the project location, facilities, the scope of work, the process we use for selecting the consultant, and then finally the staff recommendations. And before I get started, I want to introduce, we have representatives from Brown and Caldwell. We have Adam, Mike, and Elizabeth has joined us today.
Okay, the Groundwater Reliability Plus program is made up of several projects and initiatives. I'm going to just talk about the top three on this chart here. Those are the Groundwater Recharge Project. The first one on the left, Groundwater Sustainability, those are the current groundwater recharge we're doing. We do river diversions. We do the import into the river basin that we spread for Saboba. Water banking is the new water banking, new imported water being brought in. That includes the construction of the Mountain Avenue West project, which was just, we had the dedication last week, so it's operational once we have water available from Metropolitan. And then on the right is this project, the Purified Water Replenishment, which will take recycled water and advanced treat it and then combine that with the water banking water in Mountain Avenue West. And then the projects on the bottom, those are other initiatives I'm not going to go into that also help the yield and quantity of the basin. Okay, the Groundwater Reliability Plus has a lot of benefits. Drought reliability is a big benefit, less dependent on imported water. Enhanced groundwater quality. The water we're going to recharge with this project is better, lower salinity than the groundwater existing today. So we're going to help improve the water quality there. The groundwater is as deep as 500 feet in places. If we can bring that water level higher, it'll be less pumping costs for not only us, but all the users in the basin, and increase availability of water, especially in times of drought. And this project's using the proven technology that other districts have used. We're meeting all the state and local regulations for groundwater recharge. Okay, this graphic is just kind of our current and proposed operations. Again, the existing recharge goes to what we call our IRP recharge ponds. In the gray are the three new sources of water that will be recharged in Mountain Avenue West. Again, I said the water banking. We're going to do a blend of tertiary and purified water replenishment through the advanced treatment plant. And then that all gets recharged in the aquifer, and then it gets pumped out and goes through our normal distribution system. And this graphics is a little more on the PWR treatment. Again, we're starting off with all the water is coming from the San Jacinto Regional Water Reclamation Facility. It's all disinfected, tertiary, recycled water, meets Title 22. Then we're going to take a continuous flow, about 2 MGD to start off with, and that will go through an MFRO process, and then that will be sent to the Mountain Avenue Recharge. In addition to that, we're going to take our regular recycled water and we're going to blend it with the advanced treated water before it gets recharged in the ponds. And that's going to be a seasonal component. So in the winter when we have excess recycled water, we can send more. In the summer when we have higher non-potable demands, agriculture, stuff like that, we'll send less recycled water. And on an annual basis, that'll be about 2,000 acre feet apiece, so about a 50-50 blend of water. Once that's recharged, we've done the groundwater modeling, and it takes over 5 years to get to the closest well, and that's a well that EMWD owns and operates. Now I'm just going to go through some of the proposed facilities here. They're just numbered so I can talk to talking points. There's four components of the PWR project. This contract is for items number one and two. It's the actual advanced treatment plant, the MFRO, and then the brine management system, and we're proposing on using brine evaporation ponds out there. And then later next year, there'll be another contract to do the pipelines. We're going to reline an existing recycle line that's been out of service for a few years, and then we'll construct a new pipeline from approximately where Alessandra Ponds are down to the new Mountain Avenue West. The Mountain Avenue West contract included all the facilities in it to bring this additional water source in there, so we don't need to do anything on site at Mountain Avenue West. This is a little more zoomed in. The orange box is the existing regional reclamation facility. excuse me. The yellow are the solar panels, about 30 acres, that the district recently constructed. And then the two components of this project is the purple brine pond. That's about 20 acres we've reserved for that. And then the advanced water treatment plant is about 4 acres. And that's going to be outside the fence line of the existing plant, just north of our existing artificial wetlands. Okay, so we've been working on this project for quite some time. It started with planning and feasibility studies, including the strategic plan, integrated resource plan. We went on the preliminary design. We actually completed a preliminary design report. And then we switched and we started working on the regulatory process. And that included having a good groundwater model. We created a Title 22 engineering report, which needs to be approved by DDW. And we just recently got conditional approval. And we'll be having a public hearing on December 8th for adoption of that Title 22 engineering report. Brine management, we got a grant from Metropolitan Water District in the state, and we've been out there testing different RO reverse osmosis systems out there. And to give a plug, Metropolitan is having a webinar on December 7th, and EMWD will be presenting our results of the pilot test to EMWD, and anybody that wants to join that webinar is welcome to. Mountain Avenue West, I just mentioned, it's operational now, and it's ready to go. And then public outreach, we've been working with PGA. They have a whole list of ongoing public outreach that they've been doing and a dedicated website, microsite for that. All right, so this item, the final design, the scope of work has the standard things you would expect to see in their project management investigations. We need to do some geotech work out there. And again, this is for the advanced treatment plant and the brine ponds. And looking at probably doing two construction contracts, one to get out there and do the mass grading of the brine ponds, get the monitoring wells in place, and then follow that up with the actual treatment facility. All right, so we used our standard EMWD selection process. We went out to proposals in June. We sent 7 out. We got 5 good proposals back in August. We ended up interviewing the top 3 firms, and then we had a selection panel of 6 for the written and 7 for the actual interviews. And those were 3 from engineering department. Then we had representative from planning, environmental, regulatory, and operational staff as well. So the summary, we take in a lot of evaluation criteria, approach to work being the number one weighted item, past performance, other jobs, and Brown and Caldwell was selected as the number one, ranked number one. Some of their experience I'm going to highlight real quick. They're currently the design engineer for the city of Escondido. They're doing a similar advanced treated recycled water, MFRO, for agricultural irrigation water. And so they're working on that project. It's in construction, I believe. They've also worked on the city of San Diego. They were the design engineers for the pilot program, the pilot plant. But their pilot plant's about the same size as our 2MGD plant. So that's some of their experience. And it's a team. They have 9 subs. I'm just going to highlight the top 2. GHD in the brine management. They've not only designed, but they're operating some brine ponds for the state of Arizona. SPI, membrane specialists, they were a partner with us on the pilot project, so we have a long working history with them on this project, and then you can see the rest of the consultants there. So if approved, our schedule is to be able to complete this in about 18 months, to be able to go out to construction. We may award a smaller project just for the grading to get that going, but we're hoping that we can go out for final bids construction in the spring of 2023. So with that, our recommendation is to approve a final design contract with Brown and Caldwell for the PWR Advanced Water Treatment Facility in the amount of approximately $3,178,000, and then additional appropriation of approximately $3,800,000, and that includes staff time permitting the project. And that's the end of my presentation. I'll take any questions if you have any.
All right, great presentation, lots of enthusiasm, which I always love. So, any questions?
I don't have any questions. I'm sorry, I wasn't going to say excellent presentation, though. You made it very clear and understandable, so thank you.
Director Armstrong? Yeah, I want to say great presentation. We saw this last week, and I enjoyed it today as much as I did last week, seeing it twice. It's like a good movie.
Great.
It's a really good presentation. It's really important to... At least for me, it really helps me understand the project. So, but I do have one question again. So, given this timeline, when, if everything went, you know, well and on schedule, when would we see our first drop of the pure water into the Mountain West return?
So, again, that would probably be another 18 months for construction, 12 to 18 months. So now that's pushing you towards the end of 2024.
Director Armstrong, if I can add to that. Thank you, David, for a great presentation. As the board is aware, this has been a long time coming. We've been working on this initiative for a number of years, and we're very pleased that we are at the point where we're advancing the final design. After spending the last 2 years working through the regulatory permitting and compliance and getting the CEQA certified. But to your question, Director Armstrong, our intent is to, in parallel to advancing the design, pursue funding for this program. Title 16, federal funding, as well as potentially regional funding. You know, we'll see where the LRP program is with MET, but that would be another source of funding in support of this effort. So there are a number of funding opportunities that we are currently examining and we intend on pursuing. So to answer your question, partly the timing of the initiation of construction will be dependent upon our success in securing funding. And so we obviously will keep the board aware of any funding that we're able to secure, but that is part of our calculus moving forward.
I had a couple questions.
Director Corona.
On the RO, is the plan, do you have a specific TDS you're looking for to recharge? Are you going to reverse osmosis down to nothing and then blend back? And then,
yes,
in the pond. So, what is our goal there?
So our recycled water is about 600 TDS or so. The basin itself has a maximum beneficial use of 500 TDS. So that's the maximum the regional board will allow us. But the existing groundwater is in the high 300s currently. And so the RO essentially takes it to zero, not quite, but essentially. So by doing a 50-50 blend, we'll be recharging about 300 TDS. So it is important to remove those salts.
Okay. And then my other question is on the evaporation ponds. So when you're looking at that type of evaporation, how do you take care of birds and potential environmental problems with that? Back when I was with Rancho, we looked at a system like that, and we ruled it out because of problems with birds and nesting and things like that.
We do have our CEQA document, our full EIR approved, and we don't have a specific mitigation requirement for the birds out there. I mean, the district has a lot of ponds and storage areas now, and we kind of deal with it. But we're looking, we haven't designed all the details, but we are looking at doing maybe some fountains or spray, which will help with the evaporation rate, but it will always also discourage birds as well. So those are some final things that we'll work out in design.
And Dr. Caron, there are a number of operating facilities that do utilize brine evaporation ponds, power plants, and other industries. So we have examined those facilities. In fact, we've toured one of those facilities as well years ago. So we believe that we can be fully compliant with the CEQA regulations. There are certain protections that we're going to have to incorporate into the design. For example, as Dave was mentioning, one of the enhancements for evaporation is misters. Well, those misters have to be controlled in such a fashion. If you have wind conditions, they have to shut off immediately. So there are some elements in the design that have to be considered to protect and make sure that we're maintaining proper operation of those facilities. Those details will have to be examined more closely during the final design stage.
So it would have like a concrete bottom so you could scrape all this stuff up and get it out of there?
It will have a double liner. Has to have double liner and has to have ability to monitor any leakage between the liners and recover it. But we haven't actually designed...
Because how are you going to get it out then?
Yeah. Well, we haven't actually determined whether we're going to put a concrete liner on it or we're just going to leave the HDPE liner, because those liners, and it depends on the lifespan. If that liner only has a 25-year lifespan, we can design the pond so that it can accumulate salts for 25 years. So we're not going to have to go in there and remove those salts every year. It can be a long term. So when you go in there, say it's 25 years, you're going to replace that liner anyway. So we're not, it's a huge expense to start doing the concrete liner. So we're trying to weigh the balance of that. And that, again, is kind of a final design detail that we have some options there that will work out.
So if I can add, Dr. Caron, I think when we looked at the rate of accumulation of the deposits in the pond, it was a matter of... I think maybe an inch a year, if not less. So it would take many years for the deposits to accumulate to a point where we would have to physically remove them. Having said that, we are going to look at the means to remove the whether that's manual or whether it's part of the replacement of the liner. It's obviously a consideration that we're going to have to look at. But the rate of deposit accumulation is such that it would have to be removed or addressed every many years, probably every decade or so. So we'll look at that issue, absolutely.
Thank you.
Director Record, do you have any questions on this item?
Actually, more comments than questions. I'm just, again, very pleased that the district is this far along with this, especially when it's the water supply conditions we find ourselves in today. We're so far ahead of other agencies as usual. So this is a real milestone, and really pleased that we're as far along as we are. Happy to move this item.
All right. It has been moved by Director Record.
Second.
It's been seconded by Director Corona. May I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
And the item passes 5-0. Thank you very much for your hard work on this. So, all right, we will go on to item D, which is to approve and authorize a contract with WECA Incorporated for $2.5 million under specification 1342W and an agreement with Krieger and Stewart for $132,000 for support services during construction for the Pettit Regulated Pressure Zone Project, an additional appropriation of $3.4 million.
Mr. President, I'm going to recuse myself on this.
Okay, and
my
Director,
family does business with Krieger and Stewart.
Director Corona is going to leave the dais on this item because he has a conflict. Very good. Go ahead. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, President Pauly, fellow members of the board. I'm happy to be here today to present to you our Pettit Regulated Pressure Zone. By way of background, the project involves continued growth of the district, and as we continue to grow and expand, we have to continue to adjust our pressure zones. And with that, we look to advance a pressure zone conversion in the city of Moreno Valley to convert our Moreno 1680 zone to about 1710. And to do that, we would add four pressure regulating stations, various pipelines, approximately 2,400 linear feet of pipeline, as well as various connections and approximately 30 valve closures. With that, this pressure zone conversion would address about 2,000 customers in our service area, as highlighted in yellow there in that exhibit on the upper right. Taking a little closer look at that, we're generally located in the city of Moreno Valley from Hecock to LaSalle in the east-west direction and from Cottonwood Avenue to Cactus Avenue. And the pressure-reducing stations are located generally around the perimeter to establish the new pressure zone. Again, it's that yellow region shown here on this diagram. We also will do various connections along the southern boundary and valves, as well as those pipelines I mentioned earlier. We have a pipeline that will situate on Paris Boulevard as well as on LaSalle. In addition to this pressure zone conversion, we have a small pressure zone conversion to the north of this project on Paris Boulevard. That is a part of the Cactus 2 Feeder Phase 1 effort, so we'll be coordinating those efforts together as we move forward. In addition to coordinating with our own internal projects, we've closely coordinated this effort with the city of Moreno Valley. But we will be closely coordinating our capital program. The Cactus 2 Feeder Phase 1 effort is currently under construction. Actual physical activities will be starting very soon. And then we'll also be coordinating with our Paris North Raw Water Conveyance Pipeline, which should go out to bid in early 2022. By way of bid summary, we advertised the project in August, and in September we received two bids. And after evaluation of those bids, WECA was the lowest responsive and responsible bidder with a bid of about $2.5 million. Relative to the engineer's estimate, this bid was a little bit higher due to the current bid climate and that the fact that this work is very complex and spread across a wide region. If approved today, we look to advance this project as soon as possible, starting later this month, and we look to complete here in early 2023. And just to give you an example of what one of the PRVs looks like, here's an illustration of that. And as you can tell with the enhancements we've made, these facilities will be out of sight and out of mind. So with that, our recommendation today is to, one, advance a construction contract with WECA in the amount of approximately $2.5 million. Two, advance a contract with Krieger and Seward for engineering support services during construction in the amount of approximately $130,000, also advance other ancillary contracts to complete the work. And then our request today is to approve additional appropriation of approximately $3.5 million, taking the total project to just under $4 million. With that, that concludes my presentation. Any questions?
Do we have any questions? Director Slauson?
Yes, I didn't think of this during our ops and engineering presentation, but this is an older area. Probably built in the 70s or something, most of the homes there. Years ago, I was with a firm in Palm Springs, and we did a similar project in Palm Desert, a small service district. And when they went live with it, we had a whole bunch of leaks. So what do we do? What measures do we take to kind of watch that?
So that's a very good question. We'll closely coordinate with the community as we transition to the higher pressure. Typically, initially, we'll set the pressure at the same level and slowly increase it over time. So it's not an immediate reaction that would cause concern.
Okay, great. I think it's great. It's
Director Record, any questions on this item?
No questions.
Would you like to move the item, Director Slauson?
I would move approval.
Moved by Director Slauson, second by Director Armstrong. I'd like to note for the record that Director Corona is not on the dais due to a conflict on this item. May I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
The item passes 4-0 with Director Corona absent from the vote.
Steve.
Back. We will go to item E, which is to approve and authorize contracts with GES Biotech LLC for $844,000 and Hemet Manufacturing Company Incorporated doing business as Genesis Construction, $238,000 for the San Jacinto Regional Water Reclamation Facility Biofilter Media Conversion Project and appropriation of $1.4 million. Mr. Melendez, good morning, sir.
Good morning. I'm back with another biofilter project. However, this is another conversion to get away from wood chips, so hopefully these dissipate over the next couple decades here. So we'll review the biofilter and why we need the project. I'll review the media we're going to install in this project. It's different than the last time. And then go over the proposals we received for installation services, our cost schedule recommendations. So this is the biofilter at the San Jacinto plant. This one's two cells. As I mentioned, it's currently loaded with the organic media wood chips. We last changed this media in 2018, and in just the 2 years, it is severely degraded. And this week, I got an update from the plant. The pressure is built up on the discharge of the fans to the point where air is coming out of the drains that are meant to drain water from the filter. So it's degraded quite severely. This is a plan view of how it's built. As a reminder, we have the main air header runs down the center, and then there are a series of laterals with small holes drilled in them to disperse the air throughout the filter. And this is the side view, with these small holes being those laterals. So as part of the scope of work, these layers up here will be removed. That's the organics. The layer down here resembles a lava rock. We're going to reuse that material, but we're going to take all that out. We're going to take the laterals out, clean everything, screen that lava rock, put it back, and then we'll put the new media on top. And the reason we're going to take all these extra steps is we were able to secure a 20-year warranty on this media as well. We're trying to take every step we can to not have to touch this again for 20 years. This is what the biofilter looked like a couple weeks ago. You can see how far it's compacted. When it was new in 2018, you can see the sprinkler line up here. The media, the filter was full all the way up to that sprinkler line. So that's how far it's compacted. This was the last smoke test of the filter. The smoke should be even, and you can see the severe channeling through the last couple places where air can get through. This is a picture of a previous project, how all those wood fines can migrate down into that lava rock layer and still cause problems with airflow. And so, this is an illustration of why we're going to remove all that material and screen it. And so the engineered media, it's inorganic. The media we selected is called foamed glass. So they take recycled, they recycle glass, take old stuff, they put calcium carbonate on it, run it through a kiln, and that makes the glass expand. So when you put it under a microscope, it looks like that picture on the left, provides lots of surface area for microorganisms to grow and treat the foul air. The middle picture is sort of a close-up. It looks kind of like river rock. I don't know if you remember the last media was more like small pebbles. And then on the right is what it looks like from farther away. We had asked for a 10-year warranty, but as I mentioned, and that's what they proposed. But we got the proposals in. GES still doesn't have a very long track record with this media, but you can see they provided nearly a $400,000 savings, which was substantial. Their lead time was better, and at the time of the proposals, the supply chain issues weren't as bad as they are now, so I would estimate BioRem would take at least 8 weeks longer to receive than what they quoted. BioRem comes from overseas. GES's materials made here in the States. So at any rate, we asked GES if they would extend their warranty to 20 years. They agreed. We contacted Daniel Company. They engineer and deliver odor scrubbing solutions. They've done some studies on this material, and they felt that GES's material would be just as good as BioRem, which we had used across the street at Paris. So we felt comfortable selecting their newer product for this project and saving the $400,000. I did want to note that while this proposal price here shows $797, on the recommendation is higher because we're including that $47,000 optional item in case we need more of that lava rock material down below. That's also supplied by GES. So that's an optional item we'd like approval for in case we need it. The proposals for installation services, that was a separate RFP. I kind of mentioned the scope already to remove everything, clean everything up, and then we're going to add some elbows and laterals that come up to the surface, so in case those small orifices get plugged over time, we can bring the Vactor truck over and jet those out, again, to try and prevent having to excavate the bowel filter over 20 years. And Genesis Construction was the highest rated, lowest cost proposal. They're quite a bit lower than the next proposal. We followed up with them, made sure they were comfortable with that, and they confirmed that they were, and we believe the reason for that is Genesis did the work at Paris, same exact scope of work. So they're just really familiar with what they need to do, and they've worked out all the issues. There will be a similar difference in the recommendation versus their proposal price here, as we're also including an optional item for off-site disposal of the media if we can't reuse it next door. So for GES, the total amount in the project's $845,000 almost, Genesis $239,000 nearly. Total project cost estimated at $1,405,000. So assuming approval today, we're hoping to get delivery of the media in January, do one cell in February, the second cell in March, and then wrap up the startup in April. And so with that, the recommendation is to award to GES for the media, Genesis Construction for the installation, and total appropriation of $1,405,000.
Any questions?
I got a question. What do you do with the old wooden material?
The wooden material?
Composting place?
Yeah, there's farming next door, so we're hoping we can coordinate with him and perhaps incorporate it into the soil like we did at the Paris plant. If not, Genesis has worked out a place to haul it to for the small fee of $2,500.
Okay. Are there two more of these to do at the other two plants? Or?
Yeah, Temecula will be next. We included money in the budget for next year. However, we recently received an odor complaint for that plant, and their biofilter is also consolidating. We're considering moving that project forward. And then Moreno Valley has a biofilter as well. But at that plant, that biofilter is treating only the dewatering process, which is high in ammonia and low in sulfur. So that media is lasting a lot longer just due to the nature of the loading that it sees. So eventually, you know, you'll see two more of these.
Okay. I just was curious. Would it be better to consolidate them all at once, or?
I think because of the different locations that they're in.
It's better to do them separately. Okay.
Yeah, and we were trying to spread out the costs and impact to the budget.
Gotcha. Director Record, any questions on this item?
No questions.
All right. I will look for a motion in a second. Moved by Director Corona. Seconded by Director Armstrong. May I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Cronin?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
And that passes 5-0. We will do item F, and then we'll probably take about a 10-minute break before we do the informational items. So item F is to approve and authorize recycled water accelerated retrofit program phase 3. For an appropriation of $2.5 million. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. I'm pleased to present on our ARP Phase 3. as way of background, ARP was developed in response to the state and the governor's mandate for conservation. At the time, we were doing all that we could, and management asked us to find a way to expedite and advance our, and help our customers retrofit over to recycled water. So the ARP was developed as a conservation and financing program to help achieve additional potable water offsets. There's three primary elements to the ARP. First, staff and existing consultants provide technical and permitting design support up to health department submittals and reviews and approvals and the actual retrofit construction design drawings that are used for construction. Primarily through EMWD field crews, we provide all of the new recycled water services to the sites, and then we also will do all the abandonment of the potable water sites. And then finally, we provide up to $5,000 per acre foot directly to the customer to reimburse for actual costs for the construction of the on-site retrofit. We also are leveraging Metropolitan's on-site retrofit program, and we receive $975 an acre foot from that program to help offset our costs. So once they retrofit to recycle water, the customers will then pay a special ARP rate, which is set at 75% of the potable rate. We recover our cost through a delta of the ARP rate and the standard recycled water tertiary rate. And then after 8 years, the customer reverts to the then in effect recycled water rate. Phase one was approved and authorized by the board in August of 2015 with an objective of 400 acre feet of what I call the low-hanging fruit, the parks and schools that were right next to the pipelines. We were able to get 469 acre feet completed within a year. And our total cost for phase one was $1.9 million. To date, we've recovered $445,000 from Metropolitan's ORP. And through the rate differential, we recovered about $675,000. Phase two was approved and authorized in September 2017. Our objective was to retrofit an additional 460 acre feet, but really the higher fruit in the tree, a little more complex projects, and then also we incorporated a non-functional turf transformation component to phase two projects. In February in 2020, the board approved and authorized an additional $1.5 million due to the complexity of a lot of these projects and the cost. We needed additional funding to finish. We have 516 acre feet completed at 21 sites or nearing completion. 18 of those are complete, representing 323 acre feet. Two are finalized in our service connection, one of which is Hemet West, and that is representing 189 feet. And then we have one more project that we're finalizing the funding agreement right now. For phase two, we've completed 580,000 square feet of non-functional turf transformation, and then also with that 516 acre feet potable offset, we still have an ongoing recycled water usage and revenue of 425 acre feet. So our total phase cost for phase two is $4 million. I want to just give a couple highlights. One of the projects was the Lowe's Regional Distribution Center in Paris on Ramona Expressway and Indian. Here's a before picture. They had 220,000 square feet of non-functional turf, primarily along the Ramona Expressway streetscape. And here's the after picture. Ultimate ongoing water usage for the site is close to half of what the original was. Another project highlight is the lakes at Hemet West. We were able to remove 360,000 square feet. Prior to the retrofit, they're using over 250 acre feet of potable water, and you can see the total water reduction, especially on the potable side, down to about 80 feet post-project. So just a quick snapshot of how ARP compares to existing conservation programs. On the left is what our standard conservation programs are, and they range between $100 to $2,000 an acre foot. The ARP is very competitive, phase one at $405 and phase two at $775 using the same basis of cost. So it provides both conservation, and then with the ongoing use of recycled water, we still have a financial recovery for those investments. So for phase three, there's a lot of projects that are becoming available primarily from the expansion of development. And as developers build more recycled water distribution pipelines, they're going up to sites that prior to did not have access to recycled water. In addition, we are getting ready to go out to bid for the French Valley Phase 2 distribution expansion project, which will expand recycled water in the French Valley area. We have 450 acre feet currently identified, with more kind of popping up all the time. New to ARP is the Romoland School District and the City of Menifee and the Murrieta Valley Unified School District. So our budget for Phase 3 is $2.5 million. We wanted to make a couple modifications. First off is wanted to give our general manager the authorization to approve additional funding on a project-by-project basis up to $7,500 acre-foot if needed. And then also, because what we're seeing is that the ongoing usage of these sites after the retrofit is about is 30% less in terms of water consumption, our recovery is taking a little bit longer. So we want to extend that ARP rate out to 10 years so that the district is made whole. So lots of benefits to our ARP, but the customer doesn't really have any costs up front. They save money right off the bat, and they get to maintain their landscape. AMWD gets the benefit of the potable water offset, and the ARP rate it really helps to reinforce the value of recycled water. We've been recognized at the state level, at the national level. Most recently, we were awarded the 2021 California Municipal Utilities Association Resource Efficiency and Community Service Award. So just had to throw that out there. So our recommendation is to approve Phase 3 and appropriate $2.5 million, advanced the retrofit funding agreements up to $250,000, and then also advance other ancillary contracts necessary to complete the program. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions?
I just have a comment.
Director Record, any questions on this item?
No questions. Great program, very innovative. I'm not surprised that we get recognized for it. It's just another example of Eastern just kind of going along and doing our thing and so far ahead of most other agencies. It's incredible. But what a great concept to, fund it. And not only are we reducing water usage, but exchanging non-potable water for potable water, which is a fantastic benefit. So, my compliments to staff and everyone involved. So, very proud of this program.
Director Armstrong?
I just will echo what Director Record said. I think it's a great program, and it's a win-win for everybody, and it is very innovative and something to be proud of.
No, I'd like to echo those. I would like to request for the upcoming Aqua Conference. I'd love a picture of that Lowe's photo and maybe the stats just on my phone if I was walking around Aqua and show them what can be done when you want to replace non-functional turf. So great presentation, great job, and I look forward to the French Valley continuing to do some recycled water projects out in French Valley.
Absolutely.
With that, I'm going to go ahead and move this item. Do I have a second? Director Corona, second. May I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
That passes 5-0. Why don't we go ahead and take about a 10-minute break here before we go into informational items. Our meeting this morning. We are going to move on to item 6 of our agenda today, which is the informational items and presentations. I understand we have a informational item on supply chain impacts to the district. Mr. Melendez, are you going to take point on this?
Yeah, I was going to kick it off, and then Dave is going to take over the second half. Dave and his staff, reclamation staff, engineering, the contract staff, we all worked together and collaborated on this one. So thank you to everyone for their contributions. So as we've been discussing, you know, over the last year, we've been noticing rising costs and time to receive materials. And so in our OFA projects and capital projects, we're seeing delays and increases in budgets. And so in O&M, at least, we're concerned about the impacts on our OFA budget and even our service area budgets, as even the smaller things that we purchase are becoming more expensive. So price and lead time increases are being seen on basically everything, plastic, which is affecting pipe, steel, the same thing for steel pipe. Freight costs are going up, and freight is so chaotic right now that we'll issue a PO and they won't even give us the shipping costs until the day they're ready to ship it. So we've been making a lot of modifications, purchase orders for that. Chemicals are saying the same thing. I mean, even paint, we were trying to paint some buildings at the Temecula plant, and that got delayed by 2 months, just trying to get paint. And so we're not, you know, logistics experts, but our understanding of the current situation is related to a couple things. And it started during COVID. So there was initially the labor shortage, and it seems like the biggest impact is related to truck drivers, especially ones with hazmat endorsements. And so during the pandemic, when things weren't moving, a lot of people decided to retire. Another major contributor is that DMVs had closed down, and so people couldn't take their practical tests. So in 2020, there were 50% fewer new licenses that were issued. And then at the same time, the federal government decided to implement a new database for tracking felonies and other, you know, drug-related incidents with drivers. And that took tens of thousands of drivers, you know, out of the pool of available drivers when they started getting caught for their various incidents. So that's one of the biggest issues, it seems, that we've heard from the Department of Homeland Security that's currently causing delays. Another thing was Hurricane Ida. That was the storm that hit the Gulf Coast, caused that big freeze across Texas. That took out a lot of petrochemical plants, disrupted trucking routes from that area. That started the chlorine issues, plastics, resins, all those other things we already covered. And then the shipping challenges, just running the ports, having truckers be able to come and pick up containers. They're seeing about two-week anchor times for a ship to even get into the port. And then recent things I had read, once they're unloaded and on shore, the containers are waiting another 3 weeks for a truck to come and pick them up. This was a shot. There's actually a website. It's very interesting, similar to the air traffic control websites you can see, that shows all of the vessels all over the world and the direction they're going. And if you zoom in to the Long Beach and LA Harbor, when we made the presentation on the 10th, this is what it looked like. I counted 53, but when you read some of the articles, they're saying it's as many as 80 ships are out there anchored and waiting. And while it was 11.5-day wait time on the 10th, I think last week it was 13.5 days just waiting to get in and unload. So I'll turn it over to Dave.
So this figure shows some of the change to construction inputs and bid prices, and you can see the inputs for labor and materials have risen 27.8% since May of 2020, and bid prices have gone up 5.2%. So we're seeing that and feeling that in our projects. And here you can specifically see selected materials. So you can see lumber and plywood went up 120%, but then corrected and came back down around 52%. But everything else is still on the rise. So this feeds into a lot of what the district does, a lot of our projects and materials. Purchasing brought this to our attention, and they discussed the rate for a 40-foot shipping container coming from China or East Asia to our West Coast. And in November of 2020, it was $3,847 for a 40-foot container, It's now over $16,000, and the price is remaining steady. So it's up 326%. So this is added cost to anything that we're going to be purchasing. On this one, we've been having issues with lead times. And Blue Book, USA Blue Book, who provides a lot of our chemical equipment, they will not even provide us an estimated lead time until we give them a PO. So we don't know what we're dealing with. And the picture on the top right is a peristaltic pump, and it has a wear part on there, which is the tube. And typically the lead time for that would be 2 to 3 weeks. So really, they were always on the shelf. They'd say 2 to 3 weeks, but we'd always have it within the week. That lead time is now 8 to 10 weeks. So that's caused us to rethink our critical supplies, our critical inventory. We'd already completed an effort early on in COVID to make sure we had all the supplies we needed, but now we're having to redouble our efforts because our lead times, where we used to say like a VFD would be 8 to 12 weeks, is now double that. So we have to really think about what's critical, what do we need to keep everything running. This is a good example of the lead time increases. So you'll remember that we had the flood at Golden Triangle earlier this year, and we had just installed a new generator at that site, which was then damaged beyond repair during the flooding. So the lead time for that was purchased in August of 2020, and the lead time was 10 to 12 weeks. We just ordered a replacement in June of this year, and it's now 18 to 20 weeks. Just 2 months after that, we ordered an 80 kW generator, which is smaller in size, about the same size as a Golden Triangle one for Clark Street Lift Station, and that lead time has now jumped to 25 to 27 weeks, and we're seeing that across the board on generators, so that's really going to impact some of our projects like Paris North. At Paris Water Filtration Plant, we had a compressor fail, and these compressors are critical to plant operation, and so we put in our spare compressor, and it also failed, so we were able to rent a compressor that was able to get us by until it was replaced. But we paid for expedited shipping, which is 2 to 5 weeks. Well, the 2 to 5 weeks came and went. They ended up waiving the expedited shipping fee, but we didn't receive it. We ordered it in February. We received it in May. And actually, that would be pretty good right now because it's probably quite a bit longer than that. It's also caused SCADA equipment delays. So we've had to switch suppliers for our UPS supplies. Because they were not able to meet our deadlines. And purchasing has been a great help with this. They've been staying ahead of this and helping us find alternatives. So we've had to cancel orders and order from other suppliers to meet those needs. And then we've also had to be creative where IS has provided us some media converters that we needed for the Paris 2 desalter. They were able to loan us some to get us by until we could get the other ones in. They were extended shipping date. So our warehouse inventory has also been depleted. And an example of that would be, our Dell monitors. For the SCADA project, we had planned on using the Dell monitors as part of that because we already stock them. We already have those in, and we get a good price on those. But they're not going to be replenished until January of 2022. At least that's the new date. So we ended up having to find a similar style monitor, work with Mike Malone on that, and we were able to keep the project on schedule, but we just had to change it up. And then for our Kingfisher units, which these are our remote terminal units to control all of our remote facilities, all 300-plus facilities, we were unable to get modules from Kingfisher, from our local vendor. And so we ended up calling the manufacturer, and the manufacturer had our local supplier release additional supplies to help us with our inventory. And these are needed with our new facilities coming online. We need these units to get those up and running. And then I think you're all aware of the chemical issues. We've had chemical issues with sodium hypochlorite from the hurricane and then the freeze in Texas, and then power outages throughout the country. So we've had some issues with that, and that caused an increase by 13%. Fortunately, we've been able to meet our demand, but it has been an increase. And then on citric acid, the district cost has increased from $6 a gallon to $17 a gallon. And Matt, I don't know if you wanted to add anything to that, or does that cover it?
Yeah. Last week, I believe it was, I saw a press release from Olin. They're our current supplier for sodium hypochlorite, and they're one of the largest in the world for supplying chlorine. Strangely enough, in today's world, with all the difficulties of meeting demands, they've decided to close one of their plants in the Gulf Coast. Uses a specific, some kind of, you know, technology that's outdated that they don't prefer anymore. But still, that's 200,000 ton plant that's going to go offline and further constrain supplies of sodium hypochlorite. And then tomorrow, was just placed on my calendar to have a meeting with Polydyne. They're our polymer supplier for two of our reclamation plants for dewatering, and they want to review things that are going on in the market related to the chemicals they're supplying us. So I think literally every chemical that we use today is being impacted, and other agencies are having similar experiences. And so, you know, typically we'd come to you and ask for contracts that are a couple years with the option to extend, you know, for a few more years. It's looking like over the next year or two, it's going to be better, you know, just to do 1 year award of contracts with our current suppliers. You know, Olin won't take new customers right now. Polydyne won't take new customers. So if you're even to try and switch or issue an RFP, no one's really having success due to all the constraints. Everyone's just kind of locked in and managing their use. So I'm sure there will be more to come with chemicals in the near future here in a couple months as some of our contracts come up.
So for the chemicals for treatment process, we're trying to mitigate it by evaluating alternative chemicals. The budget, we're just controlling costs and monitoring expenses as best we can. And then for extended time frames, we're looking for alternative suppliers and then stocking critical spare parts and then maintaining redundancy. So that's all the information we have, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions? Any questions, Director Record?
No questions. Pretty sobering.
I was going to add, it's extremely sobering. And, you know, I sit and think sometimes. I know we have a lot of cash in the bank here, but maybe we should look at getting inventory, because I don't see this problem correcting itself very quickly. But it reminds me of something that Director Record said here probably 10 years ago that is always sticks in the back of my mind, and that is, you know, keeping our food supply inside our society here. If we ever have to get to where we're importing food, and that means having the right kind of water policies that allow our farmers to grow food for us, because if this was a food shortage, that would be a whole different situation. So I always like to, I think those are some very wise words I learned from Director Record about our agriculture.
You know, I wish that wasn't accurate, but I think it's going to play out that way. What I'm hearing about what's going on with the reinitiation of consultation is just really scary. The farmers are so going, man, we can't operate this way. So anyway, more about that later. But, yeah, interesting times.
Yeah, so. Anyway, good presentation. Appreciate it. But again, I think, you know, I think we have great management here, but I, from a board standpoint, want to do what we can to make sure that we have all the tools that we need to continue to operate our systems for our customers. So thank you very much on that. Great presentation, sobering one. That will bring us to item 7 on our agenda, which is to receive and file various reports. I will make a motion to do that.
Second.
Second by Director Armstrong. Can I get a roll call vote on that, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
And that passes 5-0. That brings us to our calendar review. Good morning, Nicole.
Good morning, President Pauly and members of the board. I have one new event to present to you this morning. On Tuesday, November 16th, the Murrieta-Wildomar Regional Economic Outlook will be held at 7:30 a.m. A flyer for this event is included in your packet on page 5, and speakers will include faculty from Mount San Jacinto College and Jamil Dada with a workforce development update. And the district is a sponsor, so we have 5 seats available for this event. Thank you, Director Corona. On page 2 of your calendar review, we have the board's upcoming events and meetings for the next 2 weeks. And on page 3, we have the upcoming board meetings and committee meetings. Just a note for tomorrow's admin committee meeting, it is an earlier start time at 3 p.m. And the November Planning Committee will be held on Tuesday, November 9th. It was moved because of Veterans Day. And the upcoming joint interagency meetings are on schedule for November, December, and January. We have the district's holiday schedule listed on page 4 as well. Do we have any questions or additions to the calendar?
I see none.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. That will go to Director's Activities Reports, and we will start with Director Armstrong.
Attended the Menifee State of the City address, and lots going on in Menifee in the future, a lot of development taking place, and also a lot of improvements to roads. I think Scott Road between the 15 and the 215 is going to be expanded to 4 lanes, and some overpasses and things like that in the future. I think it'll really help not only with traffic, but will help our staff navigating through the communities that we serve that I think sometimes can be challenging. So good things in Menifee. I attended the Riverside County Water Task Force meeting, which was really on storm and urban runoff and flood control. I thought that was very, very informative and helpful. Attended the Cal DSAL Executive Committee. One of the key things from there is the executive director there, Wendy Ritterbush, is retiring, and so they are doing a search now for a new executive director. Aqua Finance Committee, that was really the investment subcommittee, and Aqua is a little behind Eastern, but they are also looking at how to address their unfunded liability for their pension plan. And so evaluating all the things that Eastern evaluated a few months ago. And so a lot of discussion about that. Attended the Mountain Avenue West dedication. And I think that was a great job to our general manager and our board president in facilitating that meeting and that event. But really, what a great community stakeholder collaboration effort, and a lot of positive comments on the outcome of that. And, of course, that's critical to our Groundwater Reliability Plus program and all of those components. So that was a real success, and really congratulations to all the staff that worked on that. Deferred our general manager meeting this month, and then the Retirement Trust Committee, we met yesterday for the first time, and it was a really good meeting, I thought. A lot of work got accomplished even. We worked on our charter, our bylaws, investment policy, a lot, and I just want to compliment our staff. They do a great job in bringing things together and putting it together and bringing it forward to these meetings, just so well prepared and so professional. We also heard from our investment manager, PFM. They had 3 people here. One from Philadelphia flew out here, attended, their managing director. I think we're going to be in really good hands with PFM and managing these funds. And just one comment is that you're looking at how to manage these funds and what kind of the target investment returns are you looking for. And just know that I know from the past that when you set up a fund like this and you start out, it's very difficult to achieve those return targets that you set in the first year or two. It takes a while. These are long-term investments, long-term plans. So it takes a while. So I just bring that up out of managing expectations from the board and whatnot, that it may take a while to get to those targeted returns. But I think we're in really good hands, and I know we're bringing stuff back in December for the full board to see and approve, but I thought it was a really good initial meeting.
All right. All I got. Thank you so much, Director Corona.
Okay. I did not attend the Rancho California Water District board meeting. The March Air Reserve Base Champions of Flight Gala was a great event. Dave attended also. It was really nice, and monthly update with the general manager. That's always very informative. I enjoyed that. And Jeff covered most of the Mountain West dedication. I did want to say something about it. You know, it's some ponds, and it could have been just boring and, you know, just ponds. But when you look at the outside of it, it's just the landscaping and the work that's done. It's fabulous. I mean, it's just. It was noted by one of the speakers that came up, the lady from the city of San Jacinto, and how nice it looks. And, you know, we could have done it slipshod and just had dirt and chain link fence, but no, it's really a quality facility that I think the public's really going to enjoy it.
Thank you.
That's all I have.
Very good. I attended the Southern California Water Coalition dinner with few of our senior staff here. The keynote speaker was State Senator Stern, who I thought was a very engaging and had a lot of good information, and was very pleased with his comments on water. Riverside County Water Task Force attended that virtually. Always a good update on that. Good conversation with the general manager the other day, including some new items that I want to pursue that hopefully we'll bring back soon. As you guys said, the Mountain Avenue dedication was, I think, a really good event, and again, great job to staff for putting that together, and had a lot of good participation from our tribal partners. And most impressive, you know, that and I remember when we were discussing this, a few years ago, the fact that we put a walking trail around that, that when we put a facility in, we gave something back to that community. And I don't think we appreciate enough of when we do that, that really does help. So I think those are always good calls. And then WRCOG, not a lot to report there, a lot of closed session items on unwinding a few things. And then our trust committee, Jeff hit it a home run. Again, I can't say enough about PFM and the fact that I appreciate people that want to do business with this district and that involves, you know, a substantial amount of money, that they make the effort to come here and be our partners on it. So that was also a good meeting. Director Record.
Yeah, thank you, President Pauly. I did not attend the standing committee meetings at Metropolitan. I just took a few days off. Diamond Valley Lake Memorandum of Intent Implementation Committee, COVID kind of slowed that process down. We have some new faces and some Linda Krupa's stepping back as chair of that committee, so we're going to find a replacement for her, but lots of possibilities there. And good energy. The EMWD and Western joint presentation Monday morning group was very good. Joe and Craig Miller presented jointly and really laid out nicely what kind of issues we have statewide that Monday morning group could help advocate for. So that was very good.
All right. Thank you very much. And then Director Slauson.
Yes, I attended the Marshall Reserve Base Champion of Flight Gala, as Director Corona mentioned. It was a pretty good evening. Dick Rutan handed out signed copies of his book, talking about the Voyager going around the entire world, nonstop, non-refueled, first, that's the record holder. And he was with another pilot, but she wasn't there. So that was interesting, knowing the background and what they went through, sort of insightful. And at Santa Ana Watershed, we approved pursuing a grant for the Harupa Ditch Water Company to convert an open ditch they have into 14-inch PVC. And there was discussion about the County Board of Supervisors pursuing a Santa Ana River cleanup. So I told them I would forewarn Director Pauly that they would be hunting him down to help cooperate and work together.
I've heard something about that, so
yeah.
appreciate that very much. Very busy board here, as you can tell. So thank you, everyone, for that. That will take us to director's comments and future agenda items. Does anybody have any comments for the board or a future agenda item? Hearing none.
Yeah, I have some comments.
Oh, I'm sorry, Director.
I have a couple of comments.
Go ahead.
No problem. I missed, obviously, the Mountain Avenue West dedication, and I really appreciate everyone's comments on that, and I agree completely that that was a great project. And, you know, we have so much going on out there, drilling wells and creating basins, and a lot going on in the future, and I think our ability to show the community that we're part of them and we care about aesthetics and how we impact their lives is going to go a long way when we start saying, hey, we're going to start recharging recycled water, and that's to everyone's benefit. I think it just creates a different atmosphere. So that's really a great project, and I think it's went very well, and you know, more to come. Also, on the non-functional turf effort at Aqua, I just want to really compliment Danielle and Jolene on their efforts, and it may not have turned out initially the way we wanted it to, but that's okay. And you know, there's so many things that was on the agenda today that really points to how far we are ahead of most agencies in the state, that this isn't just aspirational on our part. We're doing it, and we think it's appropriate for everyone else to be doing it in the world we live in today. So thank you.
All right, thank you for those comments. I agree with you on the Aqua thing. I want to certainly, I think it's something we need to continue to work on. And we are far ahead, and I think one of our jobs is to kind of bring some of the other parts of the California water community with us as we journey on for water conservation. So with that, I understand we have a need for closed session.
That's correct. Thank you, President. Board members, one item before the board in closed session today, and that's existing litigation, Eastern Municipal Water District versus Financial Insurance Company.
Good, Joe. Are we going to do that in here?
We will, yes, okay. President right. Pauly.
We'll take about 2 or 3 minutes and yes. Close over to closed session. Mm-hmm.
No reportable actions taken by the board in closed session. Thank you.
Very good. Now we stand adjourned. Thank you.